Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the head of the UN Human Rights Commission saying there is massive evidence of crimes against humanity as she implicates the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad in authorizing war crimes. With the London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights release of its latest estimate of 125,835 killed in Syria's civil war, Middle East expert Henri Barki, who served on the U.S. State Department's policy planning staff, joins us to discuss this less than surprising finding from the UN's Commission of Inquiry into Syria and how it might affect next month's Geneva II peace conference. Then we'll get an analysis of the second Orange Revolution underway in Ukraine following the rejection by the embattled Yanukovych regime of an association agreement with the European Union. Alexander Motel, a professor of political science at Rutgers University and author of Dilemmas of Independence, Ukraine After Totalitarianism, joins us to discuss whether the corrupt and unpopular Yanukovych will be the world's only leader to have been twice driven out by people power. Then finally, as Vice President Biden visits Tokyo, Beijing, and Seoul to both assure allies and reduce tensions with China, we will get a critical appraisal of China's recent assertion of territorial claims that has riled the Japanese and South Koreans. An expert on the Chinese military, June Dreyer, a professor of political science at the University of Miami, joins us to discuss the regional and global test of power going on in the East China Sea and the risks of escalation and miscalculation. And joining us now is Henri Barki, who's a professor of international relations at Lehigh University. He served as a member of the U.S. State Department's policy planning staff, working primarily on the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, and intelligence from 1998 to 2000. He has authored, co-authored, and edited five books, among them Turkey's Kurdish Question with Graham Fuller and Reluctant Neighbor, Turkey's Role in the Middle East. His most recent book is European Responses to Globalization, Resistance, Adaptation, and Alternatives. Welcome to Background Briefing, Henri Barki.
Thank you.
And the United Nations fact-finding team have found massive evidence at the highest levels of the Syrian government that they're responsible for war crimes in this horrible civil war that I just mentioned the figures released on the latest casualty figures. Navi Pillay didn't name President Bashar al-Assad, but she said evidence collected by her Commission of Inquiry on Syria implicates the head of state. Is this going to resonate in any way?
Unfortunately not, in the sense that, A, this is not a surprise. I mean, we've known and the world has known for a long time that the regime has engaged in massive violations of human rights and war crimes. So this doesn't come as a surprise. But it also, the real problem is that it comes at a time when the regime feels very self-confident, not only of its ability to withstand the onslaught of the rebels, but is also very confident of the support it has from Russia, China, and Iran in particular. Had this report come out, let's say, 6 months to a year earlier, then it would have had much more of an impact, because President Assad of Syria was on shakier grounds. Now he feels confident, he feels secure, he thinks he's winning, and the truth is that all the signs on the ground also indicate that he has the upper hand, that this can continue for a long time, but the rebels don't have a way of winning. He may not completely win, but he's in much, much, much better position. So he goes into Geneva meetings, if they do take place, with a great deal of confidence, and this report is just going to be brushed off by his people and himself.
But while Bashar al-Assad may feel he's winning, his country is losing. Is he in an alternative universe?
Well, he's not in an alternative universe. I mean, you have to define what you mean by winning. And in this particular case, and his supporters' case, winning is surviving. And all Assad has to do is survive. And as long as he survives, he's winning. Yes, the country is being destroyed, but he doesn't really care about this country. This is a family-run business enterprise that used Syria to enrich themselves to create a hegemony over the Syrian people. Whether or not people die and the cities get destroyed is of very little concern to him, obviously. But it is also true that we are seeing in Syria a fight to the death, that is, between the regime and its supporters, the Alawite minority, and most of the Christians, against a Sunni majority, which also, by the way, has now, which now includes jihadist elements who have also committed war crimes, but not on the scale that Bashar Assad, not on the systematic scale that Bashar Assad has conducted. That said, because the Alawites and the Christians see the opposition, the majority Sunni, as one that will come and essentially kill them all, for them, survival, in whichever form that takes, is victory. And on the ground, the Syrian army, with the help of the Lebanese Shia organization Hezbollah, with Iranian support, with Russian support, has not only withstood the onslaught, but is now pushing back in many critical areas. Earlier this year, we had a very famous battle in the town of Qusair, which was captured from the rebels, and we are now seeing another major battle taking shape around the city in the valley called Kalamun, which, you know, all of these are designed to create a corridor, if you want, on the western side of Syria towards the coast from Aleppo to Damascus. And if Assad can control that, he's happy. With the rest of the country, is not under his control, is of little concern to him, I think.
Again, I'm speaking with Ori Barkey, Professor of International Relations at Lehigh University. He served as a member of the U.S. State Department's policy planning staff, working primarily on the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, and intelligence from 1998 to 2000. And he's authored, co-authored and edited five books, among them Turkey's Kurdish Question with Graham Fuller and Reluctant Neighbor, Turkey's Role in the Middle East. So this finding from Navi Pillay, which has not been made public, she just announced in Geneva that there were massive evidence of war crimes, and she implicated the head of state of Syria. And while the list is confidential, apparently it's supposed to become the basis of an international investigation. But, of course, that won't necessarily go anywhere because Syria is not a signatory to the International Criminal Court, neither is the United States for that matter. And if to take it any further, you'd have to take it to the Security Council, and that would invite a Russian and Chinese veto. So not only is it not having any impact, apparently, it's not going to have any outcome.
That's correct. I mean, you do need the Security Council, and we have seen that in the Security Council, the Russians, especially the Russians, have emerged as the diehard supporters of the Assad regime and are willing to prevent or stop anything in the Security Council that would be egregious to Assad's interests. So this report is the report. If you think about the report, it is a moral condemnation, but the moral condemnation comes a little bit too late. It might not have had an impact in the sense that it would not have changed the course of the battle, maybe, but it would have had a psychological blow to Assad had it come earlier. At this stage, as I said, he has withstood so much, and because he's so confident of the Syrian of the Iranian and Russian support, that he's going to ignore it. And they can name names, they can say Assad is involved. All Assad is going to say, this is a biased report, has nothing to do with reality. In fact, none of the investigators were allowed to come to Syria to do the fact-finding. So there's a way in which Assad is going to protect himself from all these accusations, and he's going to live on another day to fight another day.
And meanwhile, Ori Barkey, the UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights has estimated the number of dead so far has reached 125,835 in this civil war, one-third of them civilians, 28,000 rebel fighters, and 50,000 on the government side, including both regular soldiers and the Shabia, the pro-regime militias, as including 500 dead from Lebanese Hezbollah. So what is going to happen then with this upcoming Geneva II talks, which the Free Syrian Army said that they will continue fighting during the talks, and Assad has said that he's not going to hand over power. And, of course, his opposition coalition says that categorically reject any role for Assad in any transitional government. So already they are drawing lines to make the Geneva II talks moot.
Well, Ian, that's right. I mean, you answered your own question. I mean, nothing's going to happen in Geneva. I'm not sure even Geneva is going to take place. It is in many ways a farce because the two sides cannot agree on anything. And their respective patrons or supporters are also unwilling to essentially push the parties to be more accommodating. And in this particular case, so what we should expect is that fighting will continue and you probably will see much greater involvement by Gulf countries and especially by Saudi Arabia in order to defeat Assad in Syria. And through defeating Assad, they think they'll be defeating Iran. I mean, you have to put a little bit the context of the latest Iran nuclear deal. I mean, the Saudis feel quite unhappy about the deal. And the one way they have to strike back at Iran is obviously not on the nuclear front anymore, but certainly in Syria. So you can expect that they will double up or double down, if you want, on support to the opposition. And it is a no-win situation. This is going to continue, unfortunately, for a long time to come. The big issue is the refugee crisis, which is getting worse by the day. I mean, today I saw some figures of another 20,000 going to Lebanon. I mean, more than a third of Lebanon's population now is Syrian refugees. So this will have a destabilizing effect on Lebanon for sure, but ultimately on other neighboring countries as well, and we're already seeing it in Iraq. So this is no longer just a Syrian conflict. It's a regional conflict. But unfortunately, I don't see, and I don't think many people can see, a way out. There is no way out. This is a civil war that's going to have to burn itself out, unfortunately, and will take many more thousands of people with it.
Well, Ori Barkey, on that grim but realistic note, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Ori Barkey, Professor of International Relations at Lehigh University. He served as a member of the U.S. State Department's policy planning staff, working primarily on the Middle East, the Eastern Mediterranean, and intelligence from 1998 to 2000. He has authored, co-authored, and edited five books, among them Turkey's Kurdish Question with Graham Fuller, Reluctant Neighbor, Turkey's Role in the Middle East, and most recently, European Responses to Globalization, Resistance, Adaptation, and Alternative. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with an analysis of the second Orange Revolution underway in Ukraine.